Hi everyone, and welcome to the Say As It Is with Pete podcast series. I'm Pete, your host, and each week I will bring you some frank and honest conversations covering various topics from learning and development, friendships, funding, HR, strengths, recruitment, ESG, well-being, ED&I, employability, and much, much more. So let's get this week's episode underway and say as it is. Hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of Say As It Is with Pete. I am your host, Pete, as always. And today, who else would it be? And today we are, but I'm going to be tackling one of the most pressing and a kind of often misunderstood issues in the UK labour market. And this is the rise of what we call economically inactive. So these are people who aren't working and aren't actively seeking work. And right now, they represent a huge untapped workforce. So whether you're a job seeker, an employer, or maybe you're someone who is supporting others into work, understanding this group is crucial and critical. So I'm going to explore and talk you through a little bit more of who these people are and why their numbers are rising. Also, what's being done, and most importantly, how you can be part of the solution. So as always, I will share some practical tips, weave a little bit of social value recruitment in, because I like that, and then also show how StrengthScope can help you unlock that potential hidden talent that's there. So without further ado, let's get kicking this off. So who are the economically inactive? Good question. So let's start with the basics. So in the UK, economically inactive refers to people aged between the ages of 16 and 64 who are not working and not looking for work. So as of 2025, this group has swelled to over 9.2 million. That's a big number. So 9.2 million people. So you're looking at about one in five working age adults. That's quite a lot. So according to the Office of National Statistics. So who are these people? Well, they are a mixture of the following. So these are students. These are students that are not working or seeking work. These are the long-term sick or disabled, or people with impairments, because under Equality and Diversity, we shouldn't be saying disability, we should be saying impairment. This can also be carers. So these are people that are looking after family or the home or other things under the carers category. This could be early retirees. And this is also discouraged workers. So those who've given up looking for work, that have been out of work, they've looked and just thought, solid, I'm not finding anything, so I'm not working. So this isn't just statistics, it's a story for millions of lives, each with unique challenges and potential. So, you know, why are these numbers rising? So the reason for the increase in the economically inactive is driven by several factors. So one of those is long-term health conditions. So look, the pandemic left a legacy of chronic illnesses and mental health challenges. We all knew that from being such social butterflies and being out there and, you know, being with people, it changed. We then found that with the pandemic, that when it came along, that actually we were looking at the point of being home. Even those people that are single and live alone, they were on social media, you know, there was Teams, they didn't really socialize as much as they used to. So, you know, a lot of people ended up with severe anxiety, depression, drug use, alcohol use. You know, it affected a lot of people's mental health, especially a lot of young people, because young people are very engaged, interactive, very big social butterflies. But all of that changed. So it was difficult when you came out of the pandemic to try and transition back into the world of, you know, being social and being so engaged in everything. So, yeah, long-term health conditions have applied, because you've got long COVID as well, which hasn't helped. And yes, apparently long COVID is actually something that is recognised, and it should be. So also caring responsibilities is another one. So more people, especially women, are stepping out of the workforce to care for children, or elderly relatives. And now that the hopefully with the new employee bill coming out, that will give a bit more flexibility to the employee. So hopefully some of these barriers will be removed, what I'm hoping for. Then we have a kind of early retirement. So someone who has chosen to leave work early, good for you, either by choice or by necessity. It's been a long day, people. So, and it's also discouragement. So a tough job market and repetitive knockbacks can kind of zap someone's motivation, really drain them. So if people have been looking for work in their field of specialities and they're looking and they're looking and they're looking and, you know, they're applying for 20, 30, 40, 50 jobs a day or a week, and they're getting either nothing or they're getting automatic rejections due to the AI application tracking systems because those keywords aren't picked up on the CVs, it's ridiculous. And you all know my views and opinions on this. I hate CVs. CVs are ridiculous. The person is the CV. The person is the CV. I want to see names. I want to see contact details. I want to know if they have experience in the industry and how long they've been in the industry. Then I'll give them a call and have a chat with them. And if I feel that they've got what I'm looking for, I'll invite them in for a face-to-face. Then I'll get to know them and then I'll make the decision. Because you can't base everything on a CV. Seriously. You all know my opinion on CV, so that's a reason. But if people get knocked back all the time, they're going to think, sod it, why should I keep looking for work? Because I'm not getting anything. Might as well stay on benefits. I'm getting everything covered. What's the point? Hey, there we are. So there's some quick facts on this one as well. So recent ONS data shows that long-term sickness is now the single biggest reason for economically inactivity, as that's overtaking students for the first time in a decade. So it's quite concerning, right? That kind of long-term sickness. So, you know, that's a big thing. You know, before it was students, and it's kind of overtaken it now. Interesting, right? Something to think about. So why this matters for individuals and for the UK. So why should we care about economically inactive people, right? Why should we? If you want a job, go find a job, right? Support those that are looking for work. But we need to care about it. And there's a reason why. So for some individuals, being economically inactive can mean lost income, skills. You know, it could be that they don't have the skills that they need anymore. It can be social isolation as well. So for the UK, it means that a smaller workforce, skill shortages, and slower economic growth is taking place. And listen, I know the government's doing all this thing at the moment about, you know, let's get rid of the carers funding for people that people that are in care, you know, that care plan funding is kind of disappearing and they're talking about that going. People about, you know, the disability assessments, that's all changing to try and, you know, reduce the funding to get people out to work and, you know, don't penalise so many people now for not looking for work when actually we'll be encouraging people to work and creating all these skills camps, boot camps, everything else. To be honest, a lot of these initiatives are initiatives that have happened from other governments that they've picked up, dusted off, rebranded and put it out themselves. It's done and it does happen that way. Okay, I've seen many skills and boot camps. The current ones that are going through Labour government now are ones that have happened before, but just with a few extra tweaks. That's what it is, okay? But here's the opportunity for this. So, look, what we need to do is start looking at unlocking even a fraction of that talent pool, as it could transform business, communities, and lives. It could. So we need to tap into that. And I think the biggest thing as employers and as a social value recruitment lead and a social value practitioner, you could say, communities are a big thing. And, you know, one of the things I look at when looking at recruitment is looking at how many people are not working in a certain area or borough. So and that kind of gives me an idea of how many people are economically inactive, how many unemployed there are, and there's a pool of people there. But then linking with partners and charities and organizations, And in that social value front, and local communities and job boards and Facebook groups and everything to get in there. And I will say this, what employers need to do is tackle into those groups. So like, I don't know, Romanians in the UK, Romanians, you know, jobs in London, Romanian looking for work. You know, when I headed up the recruitment for the company I work for now, I was director of recruitment and L&D. And during the pandemic, I got rid of director of recruitment because it was easy to get back. Because in the restructure, due to the pandemic, because we didn't know where it was going, it was decided to just have a recruitment manager and just not have a director of recruitment because it wasn't needed at the time. Because what would we be directing? We had, you know, not a lot of staff working, not a lot of jobs available. So we didn't know where we were going with the pandemic. So, you know, but over time, it's going back to pre-pandemic levels, which is a good thing now after 5 years. We're now heading back, which is perfect. But the problem is the recruitment market is challenging as itself, and the pool of candidates are getting smaller and smaller. And where the government is saying, well, you know, for students, you've got 10 years now to wait instead of 5 years to get your British citizenship, and you know, once you're done, you go back, and you know, it's ridiculous. So the immigration side of it is mind-boggling as itself, you know. But it's getting your head around that. So, you know, for like Ukrainians, there's a two-year extension to their stay. After that, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't. Pre-settlement status now, we'll go straight into settlement status. So it's all kind of changing that kind of labour workforce. But also in the UK, it's how we tap into that, you know, economically inactive lot that are already here, and how you support your local communities, because you should be doing that. As employers, you should be reaching out to your local communities. And as a job seeker, look for those websites, look for those, you know, on X, or, you know, look on Facebook, look on other social media networks to see where you're finding like jobs in London, jobs in Croydon. You know, looking for work in Croydon, Romanians in London, you know, Spanish in London, Spanish in Manchester, because in those groups, people are posting jobs. Yeah, part of that community. Okay, I've waffled a bit there. So that kind of nicely takes me into the social value recruitment side and bringing people kind of back in to work. So social value recruitment, as I said before, is about more than just filling vacancies. It's about creating pathways for those who've been left behind. So whether through ill health, caring, or discouragement. So what can employers do? Well, employers, you can do quite a bit actually. So first of all, look at flexible working. So offer part-time, remote, or job sharing opportunities. Well-being support, look at that, mental health resources, phased return to works, and reasonable adjustments where it can be done. Okay, outreach, partner with charities, job centres, and local authorities, and to reach other inactive groups. So there's like People Plus, there's Pathway of Growth, there's Catch 22, there's Streets of Growth, Only a Payment Away, the Shore Trust. Get Set, you know, there's lots of charities out there. But I always say go to People Plus, because People Plus work with over 500 employers, but they have access to all these candidates, and they run pre-employment programs. They can tailor pre-employment to you, and it's free recruitment. It's a no-brainer, guys. So reach out to those, because they can link in to all the different charity partners for you and get you candidates and other bits and pieces. So for example, my organization is about to take over a hotel on the 24th of July, and we know we're gonna have a recruitment issue. So I've reached out to my contacts at People Plus and said, listen, a social value lead, this has been flagged up in recruitment, what can you do? They have about 20 people ready to be interviewed, so we're now planning for 20 people to go for an interview, so we don't have to advertise, hence it brings down the cost of recruitment costs for advertising, marketing, and all those kind of things. And employers, be aware, Indeed are changing the way that they charge and structure their budgets, so just be careful. So and then also there's skills refreshers, so provide training to help people, you know, regain their confidence and update their skills. So as employers, to kind of give back to the community, you might offer, you know, some some initiatives with job centers and charities, where you might do like meet the employer, let's give you some job skills and experiences in. Let's do interview experience, CV writing, dummy interviews. Kind of look into what the job is, and without going into much detail, in my organization, we had a program called RAD, which was Room Attendant Demonstration. And that was basically inviting people that had no experience of housekeeping to a RAD session or a room attendant demonstration session for an hour. They'd see a room being cleaned as it would be normally cleaned by somebody with experience, and they'd see it be done. The person would that basically the person would talk through all the steps within that time, and then we say, do you want the job or not? If you do, let's go downstairs. If not, then go. We've kind of restructured that and make it and really enhanced it this time, as I've created a different version of it and something else. So we're kind of giving them a little bit of an insight into the pathway of their careers, and it's called PATH. So PATH then leads to ALOHA. And if you've listened to some of my podcasts before, you may not know what ALOHA is, but I'm not going to now because it's a bit too much to go into. That's another podcast. But that's the PATH. So by them doing the PATH, that PATH can lead to ALOHA, and then they go ALOHA, and then they can go for the rest of the journey. But we're looking at alternate ways that we can give skills and abilities, you know, even if employers do those kind of initiatives, or, you know, support programs, even when you don't necessarily have jobs, or help people learn some IT, how to use a phone, how to use a computer, those kind of things. They're small initiatives to the communities, and it kind of gives back. It has a social value element to it. But also what you're doing is you're getting the next set ready. And you might find from providing those kind of skill refreshers to people, you know, some opportunities. They put them on apprenticeships. As I say, there's no age restriction to an apprenticeship. And if a goddamn employer says, well, you're 44, why are you applying for an apprenticeship? I'm going to say it, fuck off, because I want to. I feel I want to apply for apprenticeship. I'm going to apply for it. You know, people are going to look at apprenticeships or T-levels. There's no age restrictions. So for employers, I keep saying to people, and I hear this all the time, is, but you're 45, you're 50. Why are you doing an apprenticeship? Are you not too old? One, age discrimination. Two, back off. If someone wants to do an apprenticeship, doesn't matter with their past experience and skills, if they've, wherever they've been on their career journey, if they want to do an apprenticeship, let them do a bloody apprenticeship. They're going to bring a lot of skills, knowledge, and behaviours into your business. They've got a skill set of their own that is going to be an asset to your organisation and a benefit. Plus, they're learning something new that's going to help them grow and develop. So if I ever hear an employer say to me on a round table or just in general, I prefer looking at, you know, 16 to 19 year olds, giving them more opportunity than kind of the over 24s because, you know, a bit older than apprenticeship, I will personally slap you. So yeah, all jokes aside, there's no age restrictions to apprenticeships. So give it a go. Let people do an apprenticeship. Don't exclude them. And you can't exclude people or discriminate anybody against their age, sex, or religion. Yeah? So age, sex, It doesn't matter how old you are. That person has got the skills, the knowledge, the ability, and a complete skill set that they could bring to your organization and be a massive asset to. So think about that. Just think. Stop picking on people's ages, because I'm sick and tired of the number of people that I speak to that say, you know, they're a bit done now, aren't they? You know, yeah, well, you know, they've had their chance and their opportunities. It's more the younger generation now. That's not what social value is about, and that's not what we're here to do. We're here to support everybody into work on a social value aspect. And when I hear comments like that, it frustrates me so annoyingly. I just want to grab them and slap them, but I can't because I'm not allowed to. Be arrested. But listen, you've got to give everybody an opportunity. And for me, as a social value kind of lead, I always say, listen, as long as they're willing to work and learn, and then, you know, the lights are on and somebody's home, happy days. But when the lights are on and no one's home, it ain't going to work. You know, or if they're walking like the dead, ain't going to work. But if they're willing to learn, gain new skills, give everything a go, then I'm happy to give them the opportunity. Absolutely. No matter what, even with their disability, we can change the way we approach work, training. Everything can be adapted. We work with people with autism. We work with people who have Down syndrome. We work with people who are deaf. We've changed the way a few things that we've done. We've tailored it a little bit. We've changed our recruitment processes. You know, we've changed our onboarding processes. We've changed the way we do our training a little bit to adapt to those abilities that people need to support them into work. We're not asking employees to do a lot, and we're not. All we're saying is, as the employer, just make a few changes. Those few changes can be a big difference, and you can tap into an unlimited pool of frigging candidates that we can't see or not actively getting because we're stuck in our ways. Think about it, okay? Think about it. Take five, pause. Think about it, employers. Get your shit together, smell the coffee. Stop putting barriers up. Stop blocking people. I've seen so many applications. I know this is going on for a rant, but we're going to move on to StrengthsCoach in a minute, and I'll stop my ranting. But I've seen so many people go, oh, well, you know, if you fill out the application form that's so frigging long, name, email, phone number, next of kin, you know, upload your CV. Once your CV's uploaded, right, now list all your qualifications, list your current work experience, who's your current employer, who was your last employer, let's cover the last 5 years, what's your hobbies, what's your interests, what's your ED&I information, you know, hello, I've just uploaded a CV, and you still want more information from me? No. Some systems are good enough to pull that information for you to check through it, and then you amend it. But the company I work for, the process is very straightforward. Name, number, email, postcode. That's it. If you upload a CV, you upload a CV. If not, it's fine. We'll talk to you on the phone. Easy peasy. Then we know whether you're experienced or not. So you've got to change your processes. You've got to change the way you think on these things. Seriously, people. Employers need to take a step back, because even still today, the amount of hoops that people have to go through to apply for a job, mamma mia. Change it. Please do change it. If you need help or advice or guidance, please reach out to me. Hello at creativemind.zone. More than happy to help you review your processes. So rant over. Okay, rant over to the employer. Now, StrengthsCoach. So how does StrengthsCoach help you unlock that hidden potential, or helps unlocking that hidden potential? Well, as we know, and as a StrengthsCoach master practitioner, StrengthsCoach is a brilliant tool. I'm not just saying it's a brilliant tool for helping people rediscover what they're good at, especially after a break from work. So how can it help? Well, it can give a confidence boost. So seeing your strengths, or your unique seven, in colour, not black and white, but in colour, is powerful. Because you're seeing your strengths, you're seeing your unique, or you're seeing your unique strengths, your bubbling unders and your drainers. You're seeing whether you are kind of externally or internally processing yourself, or if you're a people person, or if you are a task focused person. So there's lots of things you can tell from your StrengthsCoach, and it's great because employers are now starting to use it in interviews, because there is a StrengthsCoach interview version, as well as doing the full StrengthsCoach assessment to then review it and see how it goes. And it can be a great help for a job seeker to, as I say, to use the power of their strengths. So there's one in there that says leadership, and leadership isn't about you leading and managing. It's about how you support a team to get to the end goal. So how have you supported in leading and driving that team to get to that end goal that you all need to get to? What was your contribution in leading in getting there? Yeah. So the terms are slightly different, and it's an interesting thing. And I'm going to do a season on StrengthsCoach anyway soon, so stay tuned for more on StrengthsCoach. But if you want to know more about StrengthsCoach, do reach out to me. So there's also career direction. So it can also bring highlights and new possibilities that you didn't or haven't considered based on your strengths. And also it can help you with interview prep. So it gives you a language to talk about your value, even if your CV has gaps. So as I said, there's things about emotional control. There's things about, you know, details for orientation. So when you're looking at your strengths profile, you can say, well, actually, my strengths are very kind of focused on people and how I'm dealing and how I like to be seen. So I have a lot of people strengths, and they can be from emotional control to developing others, leading, sorry about the police car, and other things. And from using your strength scope, it kind of gives you that kind of definition of the strength. And when your strength is in, when your strength is great, but when your strength goes into overdrive, and then you can tailor your response to that kind of strengths language. And it's also about taking you from the pathway of limitation to the pathway of possibility. So changing your mindset, putting the wind in your sails, and about also how you can talk about your bubbling unders, of how those strengths are things that you've got the potential to be great at, but also your drainers. So how you, when somebody says, what's your weakness? Well, common sense is mine, because I can't deal with people that don't have it. And when I'm surrounded with people that do not use their common sense, I'm out. That's me done. I'm drained. So yeah, so it's all about the language and how you can use it. So I love StrengthScope. So if you want to find out more, you can reach out to me. hello@creativemind.zone. And a bit of a fact, in 2024, StrengthScope survey found that returners who used the tool were 25% more likely to secure interviews, thanks to the clear self-preparation and presentation of themselves from using StrengthScope. Interesting, right? So some practical tips now for you, the job seekers returning to work. So if you are economically inactive, and you're one of those economically inactive people, and thinking about returning, here are some top tips for you. So one, start with your strengths. So take a StrengthScope assessment, like StrengthScope, to remind yourself what you bring. It's another way of saying hello to the true you. So upskill yourself. So there are free online courses, I've said before, like those from the National Career Service, to Open Learn, to Future Learning, to Allison LMS. Even if you're on Read, there's lots of Read Learning. There's lots of courses you can do. So also LinkedIn Learning. And they can help fill any knowledge and gaps and boost your confidence. So if there's certain things you're wanting to look at, like spreadsheets, there's also lots of things online, hundreds of things online. You can even use ChatGPT or Perplexity and ask it to teach you something and tell you about the subject and help you understand it more better. But I would say, if it's relating to UK work, put in there, can you tell me about X, Y, and Z, and how, you know, as I'm based in the UK and it needs to relate to UK laws, legislations, regulations, whatever it may be, but please could you relate this to UK? Because it will just give you a generic one for out, right? Unless you really want the generic version. But upskill yourself. So use like ChatGPT or Perplexity, which is more of a kind of a researching, and, you know, Perplexity searches current existing websites and thousands of, you know, different sources of data to give you a response. But then it will recommend sources like videos, articles, images, stuff like that. So upskill yourself. If you want to know what return on investment is, pop it in. If you want to know what Python is, and, you know, SCORM and things like that, and how it works and what you do, do it. There's lots of videos on YouTube you can learn from as well. So you can always upskill yourself. If you're very creative and want to get into like kind of creative media and thing, and use your creative strength, for example, you might want to learn more about Canva. There's lots of things on Canva. Yeah, there's lots of things on Canva, and you find some good videos. You learn, if you want to refresh your skills on Microsoft Teams, OneNote, all those things. There's a guy called Kevin from Microsoft. He does the Kevin Cookie Company. You can search it on YouTube, and he's got all these videos, because he uses the Kevin Cookie Company to demonstrate things on how to use Excel, Word, and all those kind of things. So he's really good, but I can't remember his full name, so please forgive me. So there's lots of things you can do to upskill yourself. Network. So reach out to former colleagues, local job clubs, or online groups. Many jobs are filled through word of mouth. So jump on LinkedIn. If you haven't got a LinkedIn profile, create it. Go on to mine. Scroll through my contacts. There's over 5,000 followers I've got, and X amount of and over 1,000 contacts. Go through them all. Go through them all. But reach out to people, ask questions. You know, reach out to your job centre, reach out to People Plus, and ask them questions. But if you don't ask, you don't get. Simple as that. So consider flexible or part-time roles. So these can be a great way to get yourself back into work. And if you've been out of work for a long time, it can help you ease yourself back in. So if you're not ready to rush back in straight to work, then look for those part-time jobs, or that flexible roles of a 3-day week, 4-day week, whatever it may be, to kind of ease yourself back in. So be honest about your breaks. So in your CV or interview, explain your time away positively. Focus on what you've learned and how you've also grown. Okay, so that's, if you're coming back, focus on those things. They're the key positive things. Focus on kind of, you know, what you learned again and how you've grown during that time. Also, on that one, look for inclusive employers. So those who talk about social value, well-being, flexibility at work are more likely to support your journey than those that aren't. And please, you can ask social value questions in interviews, like, you know, what's your social value policy? How do you network with the community? What's your aspirate? What, you know, what wellness support is there? Do you have an employee assist program or a wellness program? You know, how do you support people with that have mental health issues? You know, do you have mental health first aiders? Ask all those questions. It's not going to raise any red flags, because if you're asking, I'm going to go, oh, actually, yeah, we do provide all of this. I might say to you, why do you ask? You're saying, oh, well, you know, I just want to see, you know, how much social value you put into the business, not only externally, but what social value impact you have internally in the business as well, and how you look after your employees. As it's great to know an employer who takes care of their employees, because that makes me want to join a company that's really supportive and caring. That's it. That's all you have to say. So look at that one as well. So now for employers, tapping the untapped. This is for you. So if you are an employer who's you know, looking to access that hidden talent, here are some things you can do. So you could, as I say, advertise flexibility. So make it clear in your job ads, if it's full-time, part-time, you know, what kind of flexibility, days, whatever it may be. Also offer training and phase returns to help people get up to speed without pressure. So offer them kind of some easy e-learning, some upskilling. So put them on an Excel course, as you know, on how to use Excel, PowerPoint, give them the basics, build some of the basics into your training and e-learning. Yeah, it helps. As I say, do that phase return. So if someone has been out of business for a long time, phase them back in. You may start with like 2 days a week coming to work, and then gradually after so long move up to 3, and then 4, then get them full time, 5 days a week. So just remember, some people may struggle and they haven't interacted socially, etc. So be a little bit more flexible on this. Just understand, I know we've got productivity, I know we've got targets, I know we've got money to make, but the people should come first. Okay, so use strengths-based interviews. So focus on what people can do, not just what they've done. Okay, and if you want to know how to use StrengthsScope interviews, please let me know. I can show you how to build them in, and I can also offer them as well to you. And also measure your impact. So track how many returns you hire and their progression. A bit like I said in the boomerang hiring version, you know, they're going to boomerang themselves back, but you should be tracking for social value. You should be tracking as an employer, for HR, recruitment. You should be tracking how many returns you hire. Okay, so how many economically inactive people have you employed? Know where your people come from, because a lot of people say, well, we employ these people from Indeed or Gumtree or Total Jobs or Caterer or Find a Job. But where were they employed or not employed before? And that's a question you can ask on your application. Were you employed before or not employed before? If they weren't employed before, it's potentially economically inactive, so you can count it. So a fact, the Social Mobility Commission found that businesses with a returner program have seen 20% boost in staff retention over 3 years. Key figure. So the kind of the UK context of policy and processes. So the government is taking action to returner programs. So they are funding for schemes to help careers with older workers back into work. There's flexible working legislation, so making it easier to request flexible hours from day one. And obviously health and work pilots, so new initiatives support those with long-term health conditions. So as I say, boot camp, skills passports, there's lots of initiatives and things going on. If you're too stuck, because it's a minefield, and trust me, all these policies and programs and initiatives can be a complete minefield out there. Reach out to me or reach out to People Plus UK and they can help you because that's their bag. But there's still a long way to go. So employers, job seekers and policymakers all have a role to play. So kind of my final thoughts and kind of, you know, the next action steps for this. So, you know, what are some of the takeaways? So first of all, the economically inactive are not a lost cause. They're a huge opportunity. Social value recruitment and tools like StrengthScope can help unlock this potential for you. And whether you are looking for work or looking to hire, small changes can make a big impact. I think I'm dealing with that quite a bit today. So it gave you a bit of an ear bashing. Sorry. So this week's action plan for you to think about and possibly do is kind of, if you're returning to work, take a strengths assessment and update your CV. If you want to do a strengths assessment, reach out to me, Pete@creativemind.zone or hello@creativemind.zone, and I will pick that up with you as well. So employers, review your job adverts. Are you reaching your returners? Look at them. Where are they? Where are your job adverts? What do they look like? Are they overcomplicated? Are they straightforward? Could they be adding more in? Could they be more attractive to people to come and actually apply for you and work for you? Think about it. Also, everyone can challenge assumptions about gaps on CVs based on every gap in a story. And often, it's a strength. So look, guys, I would also say on this one as well, you know, look, if you've got gaps, you've got gaps. Be honest about it. Employers, stop being so friggin' fussy and so such a pain in the backside when it comes to recruitment. It's doing my head in. So, guys, I just want to say I hope this episode has helped understand more about the economically inactive, what can be done, how you can support. If you're a job seeker, what you can do to get at that economically inactive group, you know, to help you. So look, that's it for this week's episode of Say As It Is with Pete. Next time, I'm going to tackle the UK skills gaps and what you can do to close them, whether you're a job seeker or an employer. So, and until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and as always, just say as it is.